We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Real people, real celebrities, real talk.
Join the Breakfast Club. Blast off in your weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. Got a special guest in the building.
That's right, the METHOD, man.
Come on, don't be all beat
you
with it, bro.
You guys are the
worst, dude, man. Christ. The Method, man.
What's up, sir?
What's good, yo?
Now, and I'm surprised you're here because I read a, well, I didn't read it. I saw the interview with HuffPost Live, and you said you don't like doing interviews with hip-hop outlets because they take things out of context a lot.
Yeah, but this ain't just hip-hop, right?
Nah, absolutely not.
This is the right place
for
that.
We do a lot.
But it don't matter anyway and stuff. I say a lot of things.
This is very true.
Yeah.
So, Meth, you got a lot going on right now. Obviously, we know you're here for the movie Trainwreck.
Indeed. A lot of people in it. John Cena, LeBron James, Tilda. She's dope. Tilda Swinton. She's good in the movie. Colin Quinn. How long has it been since y'all heard that name, man? Yeah, like, yo, he's dope in the movie, too. He's, like, spot on. Norman Lloyd. This dude has been around since, like, Charlie Chaplin.
And Amy Schumer, she wrote it?
Amy wrote it. And it comes from a real place. And they say that the best comedy comes from the darkest places. So,
so what is Trainwreck about?
Basically, you know, what you females do. What you, you know,
wait, huh?
What you females do.
What we do.
Trainwrecks, man. You see it on reality TV all the time.
You guys are train wrecks too. In that case, y'all are train wrecks as well.
All
so.
Right, well, not all females, but a lot of females. And a lot of guys too. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, they're trying to save you from them taking a headline, taking something out of context. Man says all women.
Male chauvinist says
yeah,
all women.
You see, I got to be real careful with my words now, man. You offend anybody and everybody, man. For real.
This is a Judd Apatow film, right?
Yes, yeah, Judd Apatow joint. Well, Judd directed it, and he's, what can I say, that man's like a genius. He could take a comedic moment, turn it real serious, and then turn it back to comedy without missing a beat. You know what I'm saying? And, it, and the transitions are good. Like, I mean, for example, with This Is 40, when Leslie Mann's character is talking to Paul Rudd, they're in the bed, and it's like this serious conversation going on, and she's like letting him know, like, I'm at this age now, and I'm having these feelings, and you know, and it's very serious between the two of them. And then, you know, it's silence, and then he just farts. That's real right there. That's
something, definitely sounds like something you would do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's something
I remember Dutch ovens.
Dutch oven, yeah. Yeah.
Now, is this wasn't the first film you tried out for with Judd Apatow, right?
Nah, I tried out for Funny People with him, and RZA got that part.
Did that piss you off a little bit?
Nah, I was happy for RZA. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, at least one of us got it. You know what I'm saying? And then...
Did y'all tell each other, like, hey, I'm going out for to do this try for the job?
Nah. We had different agencies and agents at that time. Matter of fact, he had an agent. I didn't. I was just walking in on auditions, like, let me get that. Mm. But I promised myself that if I ever got the opportunity to work with Judd again, I don't care if it's a grip, holding a boomstick, whatever, I'm going to step up and do what I got
to
do.
And I'm sure that if you reached out to him and know him personally, he would love to work. Would have loved to work with you anyway.
Well, he did say that he wants to. His goal is to put a Wu-Tang member, each Wu-Tang member, in at least one of his freaking movies. So
wow!
Like that. Yeah.
Did you and RZA ever talk about that when y'all was coming up? Like, yeah, we gonna get into Hollywood and do the acting thing?
Nah. Me and RZA really. Well, you don't talk to RZA. RZA talks to you.
Really? Even at this stage in the game?
RZA is. Like, he's, what can I say? Like, he's an intriguing person. Like, he, when he speaks, a lot of people listen because he makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I can't even put a finger on it. He just has that magnetic thing that attracts people to him.
But that doesn't mean you always agree.
No, that doesn't mean we always agree. But, I mean, he brought 9 individuals together for one common cause, and it worked for a long time. Mm-hmm. So
it's still working.
Yeah.
Did it get difficult moving as a unit with Wu-Tang as y'all got older and more successful? Because, you know, it's like a grown man can't just keep telling you what to do.
It was difficult from day one because RZA had a lot of, when we went out on our first tour, RZA still had a lot of obligations to finish up solo albums and stuff like that. And, you know, Dirty made the shows that Dirty wanted to make. And, I mean, people got used to it after a while. But, I mean, it gets to a point where, yeah, you know, like they said in Batman, I think it was, he said, you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yep.
Yeah, that happens. We've been in the game a long time, so, you know, it's going to be flaws and mishaps and mistakes and things said. And, you know, I'm just grateful that we've been doing it this long.
I remember early on it used to be difficult because it is 9 people trying to make flights, 9 people trying to get places on time. Yeah. And one person would come, whoever was first, would say, oh, nobody else is here, and then they would leave. And then somebody else would come.
Yeah. That's lobby call. That's what anybody... You know, if you're the first one down for lobby call when it's time to go to the show, it's like, well, ain't nobody else down there? All right, I'm going to go back up for a minute. Call me when everybody else is downstairs. Because you don't want to be the first man, because you never know. Like, the notoriously late dudes is Killer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Coming downstairs late. Ghost. But Ghost has his reasons.
Right, medical.
Yeah, shit like that. And that's it, really. Mm-hmm. The rest of the dudes are pretty on point. We got to find Jizza sometimes.
Right.
But he be right there as soon as Showtime show up, just disappear out of nowhere. Boom. Right there.
And sometimes Dirty would just pop up out of nowhere and walk
Dirty
on stage.
Dirty be in the crowd watching the show, make sure we're killing it first, and then he'll come up and do the show with it.
Now, was there any pressure because you were the first artist to go solo from the Wu?
Well, at first, yeah.
At first. Was there any pressure at first because everything was riding on how successful your project was?
Ignorance is bliss. I didn't see it at that level, but mm-hmm. It was more or less like going out on the road by myself because mm-hmm. I hadn't done that. I was always out with the crew, so that was like my little shield and stuff. So it got to a point where I was like, well, I'm just going to bring a couple of block dudes with me that I'm familiar with, so I can be comfortable. And most of my shows was with Big, so, mm-hmm. you know, I was very comfortable.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
after, like, 2 or 3 shows, it was like, oh, I got this. And I only had 3 f***ing songs.
Right.
Well, Bring the Pain or what else?
Bring the Pain.
Method Man.
And it was one more. I can't
Protect Your Neck?
Now. No, not Protect Your Neck, because those were the songs that we did after I did my 3 songs. Mm. And then we would do Wu-Tang songs, and then I would bring people on stage to freestyle, and it would get crazy. And I would disappear. Mm-hmm. You know?
Is it true that they wanted your album to come out even before the Wu-Tang project?
No. Nah, that wasn't even a thought. We all started at goal like Monopoly. You know, whoever gets Boardwalk, whoever gets there first.
Mm.
So that's what it was, man. We all started at the same point, and just some dudes prospered or seen the bigger picture a little bit faster than others, or maybe the opportunity knocked for this person before it knocked for that one. But I mean, as far as my crew, all of us is dope, man.
I heard once that RZA charged you $100 to get on Protect Your Neck.
It was real though. You know, it was like, yo, bring that $100 to the studio. You know, we got to pay for the studio time. And we talking about 9 people. Well, it was 8. Mm-hmm. 8 then, you know, that's $800. That paid for a studio session and everybody rhyme was ready. I mean, we was doing that shit for free anyway in RZA house. Mm-hmm. Seven Paroi was good.
And you're the youngest one, right? Out of everybody.
Yeah.
The baby.
That ain't a lot. Oh, God. That ain't a lot. That ain't a lot. That's like, sheesh. The bar ain't that low. For real.
Now, you was one of the few MCs. You might be the only MC to actually record with Biggie and Pac while he was alive.
Yeah. Yeah, but not with Pac, though. Pac came home out of jail. He was in jail when we recorded that song. That was for the Dog Pound album. And Rage and Deck was on it. So when Pac came home, like a family supposed to do, they gave him everything they had so he can put some material out quick.
Mm.
California Love was a Dre song. They gave it to Pac.
Mm.
That song that I'm on,
I Got My Dog Mind Pound, Made Up.
They gave it to Pac. And I was, you know, salute by all means, because I was still a fan of Pac, regardless of what was going on with him and Big and stuff. And me and Big was cool, you know what I mean? But I don't judge anybody by what beefs they have, because I wasn't there. You know what I'm saying? So however they went, however it went down, or however, you know, Pac perceived Big and Big perceived Pac, that wasn't none of my business right there. I had love for Big and I had love for Pac.
So is that why Rebel INS, it says Rebel INS at the end of that track?
Yeah.
I couldn't figure that out for years. I'm like, did he produce it? What happened?
He was on it. He said a full verse, but I don't know what happened. You got to ask Daz Dillinger about that one.
Oh, damn. I got to hear that, Daz.
Yeah.
How did the music slow down for you? Because at one time, you was on everything. Every movie, every video, every song, and then it just slowed down. Was it the label? What was it?
Nah, it was the process. It was like I was doing too much. And I tell a lot of artists, last person I told that to was 2 Chainz. Like, yo, keep some of that shit for yourself. Stop giving your shit away. Keep some of that for yourself and shit. I don't know if he listened because he's still on everybody. You know, but it gets to a point where people get, not, I won't say tired, but it's like, damn, it's like, it's too much, you know? And then you got to take a step back. And what I didn't get a chance to do was step back and hone my craft. It was just like I was jotting most of those years, because it was always a new project coming up once I finished one project. And then you got dates you got to make and things of that nature. So, I mean, I was really like sleep albums 1 through 3.
Really?
Yeah.
At one point, it seemed like you were the hottest artist in the game, just lyrically. I don't know if I would call that sleep.
No, I mean, no. Don't get me wrong. And I mean, like, it wasn't to the caliber that I knew that I could get to. Even my first album, most of the material got washed out in the flood in RZA's basement, if y'all remember that history there. So I had to record while Wu-Tang was on the road, and this was our first tour. So we getting booed every effing night. So that emotion and was coming out in those records. I guess the people felt that. Second album, I didn't even really have RZA in the studio with me for the second album. It was
That was the cow.
Judgment Day.
Judgment Day.
And it was mostly True Master. You know, Fourth Disciple. I even produced one of the joints on there. And
now you still to this day work with True Master and Fourth Disciple.
No, True Master, I'm not, no.
Oh, no? With Fourth Disciple?
Yeah, though. Fourth is my man. But True Master's, he had camp.
Oh, that's right. You got locked up.
Yeah, you said it. Not me.
Well, you said camp. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, he in boot camp.
So Kendrick paid a lot of homage to you on SNL with that was the anniversary of Judgment Day.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go real. I'm going to change my whole vernacular right now. I liked it that.
You did?
I liked it that.
Did he reach out to you?
No. But I met Kendrick before. He's a cool little dude. He's focused, smart. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. It's like Public Enemy was to us, but a little more less than what Public. I mean, nobody can do what Chuck did. I mean, Chuck taught me who Marcus Garvey was, even Malcolm X. And, you know what I'm saying? Because up to that point, the schools I was in didn't teach us about Malcolm X. But Kendrick, he definitely got his thumb on the pulse of black culture.
Now, you were also one of the last artists to join social media. I remember when you joined Twitter. Yeah. What made you decide to do that? Because you didn't know what to do.
Because somebody was on there trying to get Cooch under my name.
Ooh.
So we took it.
I bet terrible. It was working, too.
I don't know. I mean, if you that dumb, ladies, I mean... Let me stop. No, ladies, I'm sorry.
You, come on, man.
No, it's just the line of questioning is going in that direction. That's all it is. Yeah, I mean, some dude was on there impersonating the kid, trying to get Cooch. Mm-hmm. And I don't think any women really fell for that.
There we go. We're smarter than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now we were talking about, you know, you were holding your music, you were doing so much stuff.
Yeah.
And then when did you stop? Because we just missed you for a period of time.
I didn't stop. You know what it was? My was off the radar, I guess. Because you think about it. After the second album came the Blackout album, another Wu-Tang album, then my next, you know what it was? It was so much time in between time. I'm on that Dr. Dre and I ain't Dr. Dre to be putting 4 and 5 years. And now, how many years has it been?
It's been since 06, right?
Yeah, it's a long time, very long time. And you can't do that. I remember Leo Cohen told me that. He was like, I love Onyx, but you know what's wrong with Onyx? They take too long to make albums. And I didn't believe him at that point because Onyx was on fire. It took him like 4 years to make that next album, which I thought was a dope album. But people weren't checking for him like that
anymore. That's a whole presidential term. You go from ninth to graduate high school.
Well, we don't think about it like that because the time is constantly moving. I mean, you're on the road, you're making appearances, you're doing all that crazy.
You're doing movies, TV shows.
Oh, man, and it doesn't slow down. And I mean, it's all fun. Even when you're not working, you're going to All-Star Weekend, you're going to Super Bowls, like that. Kevin Lyles spoiled me and Redman. Shout out to Kevin Lyles. And I mean, it doesn't slow down. That's why everything was a blur. That's what I meant by, like, I was asleep through most of those albums that I was making, with the exception of the first one.
To Cal.
And the last one. Mm. Real talk.
Did you enjoy any of the moments, though?
Yeah, all of them. Okay. I wouldn't change anything. And that's why I can't knock these new artists now for what they're doing, because we have fun.
Right.
They having fun right now. Y'all have fun, man. Fuck that. Fuck what everybody say. Y'all wear your pants as tight as y'all. Have fun, little nigga. For real, man. It's a whole world out there for y'all to explore, man. Do it.
And you and Redman made a lot of money together with the movies and sitcoms. Was there ever a point when other members of Wu-Tang would get jealous of how y'all was moving together?
Nah, it was never any jealousy and stuff like that, because all for one and one for all. It was a win for the team.
And everybody was free to do what they want to do as well. Like, yeah, it's not like you couldn't go out.
No, I wasn't no jealousy amongst the team at all, man. It was like we was all rooting for each other the same way we still root for RZA now with his directing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Ghost. Ghost was in the Iron Man movie. I don't know why it didn't make the cut, but Ghost is good. I'm telling you.
So nobody ever got jealous, knocked the turntables off while you were about to perform, or did?
That's Dirty acting crazy. And you know what that was?
Tell that story, because that's a funny story.
Because Dirty tried to take the mic from somebody earlier that night, and they wasn't having it, because this was like the fourth or fifth time Dirty had did that. He was notorious for jumping on stages, taking their mics and rocking the show, whatever. He ain't getting no love this time. People booed his ass and all that, so he was a little mad. He wasn't necessarily mad at me. We was just the next act that happened to come on and shit, you know what I'm saying? And it was, he probably didn't even know I was on stage. His ass was so drunk and shit.
And just knocked the turntables down.
Yeah, he knocked the turntables over, but thanks, Angie.
It seemed like he was always in arguments with members of the crew. I remember the show. Everybody remembers the show with you and you
that's,
got.
Yo, that's healthy. That's healthy. That's right healthy. There. That's why if anybody ever try and bark on me, I'm quick to bark on them back. I know how to argue. You know what I mean?
Remember when I first met Meth?
Fucking argue.
I thought he was so mean, but it really is just he's just a argumentative person. He don't mean nothing by it. But when I first started working there, I was like, why is he so mean? But that's just how Meth acts. He's not really.
You got to be on your guard all the time around people, you know, when you're a public figure, so to speak. Because, you know, it's a lot. I mean, if the internet is any indication of what it was back then you know what a troll is, right?
Yep.
Now imagine those motherfuckers being in the audience or standing outside your crib and shit like that, stealing your mail and things of that nature, crank calling your crib. You know, it's.
But how do you deal with it? Because you're the type that you'll come up to somebody's crib, come to somebody's job. You've done it before.
Did I ever tell you that time, Meth Man? I thought I was gonna get beat up by Meth Man.
Yeah, you told. Yeah, tell the story to people out there listening.
It was a situation I used to work with Wendy Williams, and I guess Wendy had said something about
y'all was in there joking about that.
No, I
wasn't funny, man. I heard laughter. I don't know who it was in there, but you know what? You could make good on that because she's sitting right.
His wife is right here now, Tamika. Yep.
Well, that was, hold on now, let me just explain something. That was before my time when Wendy made those comments.
You came out and spoke to me, though.
Yeah, I did, because I
they
was
made
like,
him.
Because I called Wendy's husband, like, yo, Meth Man in the lobby. And he was like, well, go talk to him. I'm like, go talk to him. So I go out there, holler at him, and Meth is like, because I made comments about your lyrics. I said you weren't as hot as you used to be.
Yeah, you were right.
And Meth
this was, came from a time, I guess, Wendy exposed that his wife had cancer at the time, and That's what it was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he wanted to holler at me. But when I walked out in that lobby, Meth was out there with two of the craziest looking motherfuckers I've ever seen in my life.
It was a driver and my cousin. You know, but perception is crazy when you know what I mean? Perception is crazy. I'm not one of them dudes that, you know, yo, I want you to sit downstairs in the car, wait for these to come out and get them. Nah, it's if you're going to see me, you're going to see me. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Face to face. And I'm not... I mean, as far as the argument stuff and stuff like that's with my brothers. I don't argue with people in the street. That's not happening. Straight up and down. If I see you, it's just going to be me and you. We're going to have a grown discussion or the illest fight ever. That's it. It ain't no in-betweens with that. You know what I'm saying? As far as old girl, I wish her the best. She's very successful. She's blessed. God bless. Do your thing. I don't even want to talk about that.
Right.
Because, you know, Method Man is the reason why we have to tape interviews now. I don't know if people know. Well, I was doing another show, and I guess we said something about meth. And meth was quick to call.
He's not playing.
And meth would call, and he expressed his feelings, and the fine was $250,000.
Jesus.
You remember that, meth?
You know what it was? It was. No, for real, for real.
And the funny thing, meth is always calm, just like this. Those are the people I'd be like, oh, Lord.
It's the fact, okay. This was when MySpace was out, and I was hearing a lot of stuff coming from the radio station. So I told my fans, you know, well, they got their people calling up, and they're probably screening calls. You know, if you say something nice about me, you're not getting through. You say something effed up, they put you on. So I had the MySpace people. I gave the number out to the station.
Oh, MySpace.
Blew it up. Blew faxes and phone calls and the website. And yeah. I don't know if that's the situation you're talking about.
No, you called. You called and you barked. You cursed a couple times. It was about $250,000 fine.
What the hell did y'all say about
it? I cursed.
I don't remember.
I cursed on the air.
Cursed on the air. It was $250,000 fine. This is before dump buttons and none of that.
Damn.
Meth looked at me. Meth said, yo, you really think I fell off lyrically? I looked down. I said, look, man, if I'm going to get beat up, I'm just going to be 100.
That's not going to beat nobody up. For real. It's like even with the Joe Buttons thing, people thought that I was mad because he said he better than me. No, he's supposed to say that. That's what MCs right. are supposed to. I'm better than everybody. You know what I'm saying? My only problem with Joe Button was everything he said after that. You know, trying to imply I had Ghost Riders and all the other that was just getting spewed. We good now, but it was like, I got to address like that because it's not true. You know what I mean? Right is right. Wrong is wrong. And I don't f*** with nobody. I mind my business. Ask about me.
True story.
I just quoted Shimmy Shimmy. Yeah, I said, Meth, you went from Shimmy Shimmy Yah to you the one like Tracy McGrady. And Meth said, you know what? I respect that.
But I was asking, how do you deal with everything going on now? Because now it's... Like you said, it's a troll, so people can talk to you about you on Instagram.
I
snap.
I can't see you on Twitter.
When Meth got on Twitter, because you actually tweeted me, but you didn't really know what you was doing.
Yeah.
And I was like, Meth is not, because he really gets like, he wants to confront. And
people.
I was like.
Yeah, I did some on Twitter, but Instagram, you know, I get into like these roasting sessions with people that try and say sideways. Because a lot of times, just look at these people's profiles sometimes, man, and you could tell what it is.
Right.
You know, but it's not fair, though, because they know all your history. You don't know these people.
But it don't matter. And snapping is snapping, you know. I say the most outlandish shit, like, you know, like you got hobbit feet and shit. You know what I'm saying? Aww. Muppet baby. But, you know, it's like, and then they get it. They get it and shit, right? And they start snapping back. And then at the end of the whole roasting session, it's like I got a friend and a fan.
Right.
Gotcha.
Now, I remember a show you had called Stung. Yeah. It was you and Redman on MTV.
Yeah.
And the show aired once. It was funny as hell.
Yeah.
Then I never saw it again. But then Punk came.
Yeah.
What the hell happened with that?
That was MTV's idea. And they used me and Redman to...
jumpstart it?
No, well, not to jumpstart it, but it was like an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing How High at the time, and it was some free promotion for us, so...
Oh, okay.
It was just a one episode thing. It wasn't ever supposed to really go on and on and on.
So they never came to y'all like, hey, we're gonna do a Punk show.
No.
Cause when I saw Punk, I was like, yo, that's Meth and Red show.
Mm-mm. Ashton got that off. It had nothing to do with us. People were trying to say MTV stole Red and Meth show. No, they didn't.
Oh.
Wow.
Mm-mm. What has bothered you the most about hip hop in like the past 15 years?
Nothing. Nothing. No hip hop.
You love it?
I mean, the art form, yeah, of course, it's tainted and, you know, certain things could be changed. But the overall culture, I mean, we in a good position, especially if you can get in, you know. I'm just looking for that next great one. Kendrick was one of them. And I'm just looking for that next great one that can be grounded enough to tell the truth.
And you have a lot of artists from Staten Island that you're putting on right now that you're...
Well, not exactly putting on. I'm going to start with my nephews. They're going to be my first.
Your nephew Spit?
Yeah, they're nice.
What's their names?
Easy, Cardi, and Freaky.
Freaky, Easy, and Cardi.
Yeah. Yeah, those my nephews right there. Shout out to Easy. He was in a fucked up car wreck and he, you know, in a coma for a minute, but he's recovering now.
Mm-hmm. I always wonder how close you and Big were, because you said Big took you out on the road. Of course y'all did after.
Well, yeah, he would call me. He would call me. You know, he flew. I remember one time he flew me out to North Carolina. And shit. I love this story here.
Y'all talk to the mic.
Cat, and four people got shot that night. Not saying Big did that. Yeah, it was a situation where he flew me and my G Carlton Fish. Shout out Carlo. We went down to North Carolina, and you know, Big was like, "Come do the show with me." We get to the spot, up in the spot. So Big up there performing. We ain't even get to do the song yet. Some screaming in the crowd, hating ass, saying whatever, whatever. And I hear Big responding on the mic. So I'm guessing he's saying he want a battle, because Big is like, "What? How much? You got some money to put up? You got some money to put up?" And then he says something like, "All right, if I win, you got to strip butt naked." So I go to see what's going on and when I get to the stage, I see B.I., he got his hand behind his back like this. Now, I'm standing behind him, so I see what's in his hand. And shit, but he just holding it. And he talking to the on the mic with the other hand. And dude is still like, "Nah, nah, 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 nah." He went to get up on that stage. Big, one of Big people snatched that shit from behind Big and just went to pummeling his ass.
Whoa.
Bop, bop, bop. Chaos. Then you hear, bow. Everybody. Big was in the back with me. So I know, you know, but like, four people got murdered that night, man.
Damn.
Yeah, man.
Did y'all already
or
have?
Or shot. I don't know if they was murdered, but four people got shot that motherfucking night.
Why didn't y'all record more music together?
I don't know.
I mean, other than him passing, but I'm just saying at the time.
I don't know. I never got the call. You know what I'm saying? I never got the call. I would have did it off top. There was one joint that we did, but it was posthumous. You know? Yeah.
Was it difficult because, you know, Ghost and Ray had to shocked by this.
It wasn't really. But you know what that was? That was a little, I ain't gonna even say, that was a little envy. I ain't gonna even lie. That was a little envy right there. And shit. Who knows? And shit. I guess they just love Nas that much. And I don't know. It's just being and shit at the time. And shit. But not for nothing. When I did that joint, the Biggie, what is it? The one that came, the
Born Again.
The Born Again joint, right? Now, I'm gonna keep it 100. They gave it $25,000 for that shit. Was it 20? But I didn't take the money. Gave it to CJ.
Big son.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. It didn't feel right.
Right.
You know?
You didn't like that. You spoke out about that album. You like you didn't like the direction of it.
I just felt like a lot of those people Big would have never did songs with, and his people agree.
Right. You've always been a very loyal person, though, when it came to being in the group, other people that you've dealt with outside of that. You said it sucks?
It sucks.
Because there's not a lot of loyalty in this business.
Nah, and that's why I say you got to keep your circle tight. And it's hard. You can't trust anybody, really. You got to keep your guard up, you know what I'm saying? For me, I guess the way me and Redman have, I don't know, the way we're portrayed, I guess, or the way we act amongst people is, like, we're like known from Cheers. Everybody just loves us. I'll be in random spots and people be showing the kid love and shit, man, where it's like, you know where you at? You know, places like that. And I mean, I get it and shit, because, you know, they just feel like we non-threatening. We not those type of dudes that's coming to take anything from them. And they when they see people like us, they think party or we gonna get high and go party and shit like that, you know, so. That little laid back, or I guess it's the same, not comparing ourselves to Cheech and Chong, but it's that same vibe that Cheech and Chong give people. I mean, black people love Cheech and Chong, white people, Asian, whoever seen their movies, they love them. And it
smoking
all
is universal.
With the weed culture. Yes, ma'am. But Trainwreck, it will be in theaters. Amy Schumer murdered that.
Trainwreck is a grade of weed, too, so that was a great thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
You ever had a bad trip?
On weed?
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger, summer youth employment program. I didn't have a summer youth job because I never could find my Social Security card.
I thought you worked at the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, you didn't need one. They paid in cash.
Oh.
So what happened?
Okay, so they woke me up in the morning. I lived on the first floor, so they knocked on the window. I was living on the first floor, 55 Bowen, apartment 123. Knocked on the window. I ain't even washed nothing. Clothes on, jumped out the window. We on the ferry. Dudes are smoking on the ferry. We smoking joint after joint after joint. Mind you, I didn't eat anything. We get to Canal Street, one of the hottest days of the summer. I didn't eat anything. I'm high as I'm like 13 years old, walking. And next thing you know, I just blacked out and passed the out. Boom.
Damn.
Woke up. Dudes was carrying me a little. They picked me up, woke me up, and went and got me something to eat. And I was good after that. That was the worst trip. And then I ate a weed brownie one time.
Oh, that, you never know how powerful that is.
Yeah, but you know what it was? I did the dumbest shit because I was hungry and I ate the whole f-ing thing, right? So I say about 15 minutes to a half hour later, yeah, yeah, it was going down. I didn't know if I wanted to shit or throw up. The room was spinning. I tried to sleep the shit off. I went to sleep. I don't know for how long. I woke up. The shit was still spinning. It was a f-ed up trip. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I might die in this moment, but I'm not calling the hospital because I can imagine what the
headlines.
Method Man ODs on brownie. I was like, I will die in this room tonight.
Yeah, OD on a brownie.
I will die in this bitch tonight before I let the LA Times get a story like that.
You one of the upper echelon weed smokers. You, Willie Nelson, yeah. Snoop Dogg, y'all can't die from no weed overdose.
Nah. But you know, I put it in the background now more than anything else because honestly, yeah, I do smoke. I still smoke. I probably smoke for the rest of my life, but I don't smoke as much as people perceive me to. You know what I mean? Back then, yes, I did.
Now, didn't you have to teach kids about the dangers of weed at one point back in the day?
Nah, I didn't, actually. No, I'm being honest. No, I didn't. It was, I got a DUI, and part of my community service was to go to high schools, and but it was me and a bunch of other people and talk about the my story, tell my story of how I got caught and the ills of driving under the influence, you know. But the people that I was sitting there with that actually killed people, you know, like one dude, his community service was already up, but he was still coming, a doctor, an Indian guy, and I remember because he had killed somebody on a motorcycle because he was texting on his phone, you know, and another lady was drunk, and out of all the cars she could have hit, she hit a DA's car.
Yikes.
A few other people, they killed people and shit. So by the time it got to my story, I was like, I ain't really got nothing good to say. I got pulled over with some weed in the car, you know. That was it.
Now the last Wu-Tang album, the one that was the private one that they were selling for so much money.
Well, the one they were auctioning off.
That wasn't the private one. It was a Better Tomorrow, right?
No, that was the one.
That was free.
Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time, Shaolin. Yeah, A Better Tomorrow came out.
Now these albums coming out. Are you a part of it, or is it one of those things where they taking verses?
No, I was there with RZA. Mm-hmm. I was the first one to go in because I had touring obligations to do. So I went in first. And I'm not going to lie, I told RZA off top. I was like, look, what kind of feel are you going for? He said, I want to give him a light feel. It's like, okay, I get that, but how much light are we giving him right now? Because, I mean, as far as core fans go, they want that first album, that gutter shit. If anything, let's try and do everything off the MP like that. But he was focused on what his vision was, and he's been right before in the past as far as I go, because I would have never put All I Need out. That was some personal shit right there, but it was his idea and the label, and it worked for me, so I'm not mad at it, and God bless Mary for putting her stamp on it. Then as time went on, dude spoke to him about certain things that was going on, and you know, we're not feeling this beat, or we're not feeling this beat, and there was a time when we went overseas where we were doing joints that guys were feeling the beats and all that stuff right there. And when he got it back to New York or wherever he took it to, it just changed. It just changed. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't like the done product at all. You know, I didn't like the process at all of making it. So I was pretty much out of the loop before it was even completed, you know.
Why didn't you like All I Need? That was my wedding song.
I didn't
He said
it
wasn't
out.
His idea
it
to
wasn't my idea to put it out. I mean, it wouldn't have been on the album if I didn't like it, pretty much. Of course, I love that song. That song has done a lot. That song meant something to me.
And that video.
More than just putting it out as a song, you know. I think what their what they were going for was something different than what I was going for. I wrote it pure thought, pure mind. This is for my woman, and that's it, a personal letter to her. And what they were going for was, okay, let's ride this wave. Women like him, so let's throw this song out there and get it popping. I mean, look at their core artists that went through that. DMX had What These Bitches Want from a right? Mm-hmm. Or no, it was...
How's it going down?
There you go. Ja Rule, I mean, his catalog is what it is and stuff. You know, it's a pattern up there, and it's a good pattern, especially if it works. But when it doesn't work, oh, it fails. Oh, my God.
Who did the All I Need remix? Because you added some bars to that one.
Puffy.
Okay, okay.
Diddy. A lot of love for Puff. I don't give a fuck what nobody say about Puffy, man. Puff is a trail. You know what I'm saying? He kept it 100 with me every time. I did wait a long time for my 2500 for the what, though. I waited a long time for that. And Puff,
the Biggie song?
2500.
The what?
Damn.
I don't know what. And, but Puff will fuck you up, too. Fuck with his woman.
We know.
We've seen it. Puff ain't playing. Get you the real cold shoulder.
Kettlebells and everything.
He ain't touched that man. That man rushed out. Let's just say that. Let's be clear. None of us was in the room, so we don't know what happened. But yeah.
No charges.
No charges.
Now, you talking about females. Was it one point where you purposely was trying to make yourself look ugly because you didn't want the sex symbol label?
I think I did. I can't remember. Probably did.
Putting that fake eye in.
I'm an asshole like that. No, but honestly, that's rock, watching rock and roll. Like, 80s glam rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's like you couldn't get away from that. I don't give a fuck how hardcore you was with the hip hop because that, you know, that's
like
what
that
we was.
Like that hair rock, that big hair.
I was the kid that sat by the radio Friday, Saturday to take Mr. Magic and Red Alert and go back and forth through the radio stations. When they first played, It's My Thing, EPMD, I caught it. Mm-hmm. World, premiere on tape, hit that mark. Like,
record.
Boom. But when we watched TV, we had, even on Hot Tracks, they was playing, I mean, we had Wham, we had Poison, we had Peter Gabriel, Sledgehammer, right? I don't know where that motherfucker came from, but it was like these. I used to
listen to all different kinds of music. Everybody uses.
I mean, Method Man came from references from Hall and Oates, Method of Modern Love. Yeah, I don't want to get sued, but yeah, damn right.
You remember your first time hearing Method Man on the radio?
Yeah, but when I first heard it, I was like, yeah, that's that. Right there, it won Battle of the Beats. Like, they had to retire it. It was the first time they retired a record or Battle of the Beats because everybody was picking that Method Man. Man,
was Angie doing it then?
Was Angie was doing Battle of the Beats or no?
I think Angie was.
Oh, she's here now. Is
it? No, but it's still, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Shit, you know. Well, tell the people what Trainwreck is about if they don't know.
Trainwreck is basically about a
all women are train wrecks. He said.
Nah, I gotta say that. Amy Schumer, Rit. Wrote, oh God. All right, I got it. Trainwreck is a film about a woman who cannot maintain a monogamous relationship because she believes monogamy isn't real. She basically goes through life with the illusion that it's one night stand after one night stand after one night stand, and she believes her life is great until she's shown a different way when she falls in love with a doctor.
Oh, so Amy Schumer's a man in Trainwreck. That's all. That's it.
Well, we appreciate you for joining us.
Thank
Absolutely.
You, Matt.
Shout out Muffin Schumer. Congratulations to you, sweetie. You deserve it.
Breakfast Club is Method Man.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC.
we dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.